Pageanttalkradio.com.
It's time for Pageant Talk Radio with Valerie Hayes, the pageant coach. This is the show that will inform and inspire you as you prepare for your next pageant competition while helping you develop life skills that transcend pageantry. Now, here's the host of Pageant Talk Radio, Valerie Hayes.
Hello, and welcome to Pageant Talk Radio. I'm Valerie Hayes, and we're going to spend today's show sharing exciting information that can help you become an elite contestant. On Pageant Talk Radio, we understand the importance of developing real skills that translate to real pageant success. We want to make sure you have all the information you need to make this year your best pageant year ever. I want to remind everyone, I'm so excited, that Miss America's Outstanding Teen Pageant will be held this year on Saturday, August 15th in Orlando, Florida at the Rosen Center, and you should definitely plan to attend. Tickets are still available for the pageant, and to get yours, all you need to do is visit the Miss America's Outstanding Teen website at www.maoteen.org. The website also has a complete listing of the contestant groupings, so you can be in the right place on the right day, as well as a link to make your hotel reservations. So don't miss this year's pageant because it's definitely going to be fabulous. I also want to remind everyone that's starting to prepare for their fall pageant that the first step is to make sure you've got a great list of pageant questions. My 501 Perfect Practice Pageant Questions is customized to your competition division and covers every question you need to practice in order to get a winning interview score. Plus, it's a downloadable ebook so you can actually start working on your pageant interview today. Just click on the 501 Perfect Practice Pageant Questions graphic on the Pageant Talk Radio show page and get yours today. It's just what you need to make sure your interview is pageant fab. Well, we have an amazingly inspirational show planned for you today. My first guest is Sam Haskell, chairman of the Miss America organization, who will be talking about his best-selling book, Promises I Made My Mother. And then later in the show, I'll be talking with Taylor Fitch, Miss America's Outstanding Teen, about her amazing year and what we can look forward to at this year's pageant. If you have a question for either one of my great guests, we'd love to hear from you during the show. To ask a question, just give us a call at 888-463-6748. That's 888. Go for it. We're looking forward to hearing from you today. Well, my first guest is a former executive vice president and worldwide head of television for the worldwide well-known William Morris Agency and was named in 2007 by TV Week as one of the 25 most influential and innovative people in television over the last quarter century. His clients included, among many others, Bill Cosby, Ray Romano, Dolly Parton, Whoopi Goldberg, and George Clooney. And after a fabled 26-year career, he retired in 2004 to pursue wide-ranging philanthropic endeavors, including executive producing Mississippi Rising, which was a three-hour MSNBC special hosted by Morgan Freeman, benefiting the victims of Hurricane Katrina in his home state. He's also well known as being the chairman of the Miss America organization. Promises I Made My Mother, Mr. Haskell's autobiographical memoir with life lessons, is an incisive, compelling, deeply personal, and spiritually enriching story about living a principled life in unprincipled times. Sam, welcome to Pageant Talk Radio.
Hi, Valerie. How are you this morning?
I'm good. And how are you out there wide awake at this hour on the West Coast?
I'm doing great. I ask all the time, you know, which city I'm in and what time it is because I don't know what time zone I'm in. I'm on a 60-city tour, and I've just finished Tampa, Florida, and St. Petersburg, Florida, city 44 and 45 on the tour, so I have about 15 to go. And I'm heading to Mississippi tomorrow to be at the Miss Mississippi pageant in Vicksburg.
And that's bound to be an exciting pageant. And while you're there, I know that I happen to run into you at one of your 60-city tour. While you're there, people can actually say hello and meet you and get an autographed copy of the book, can't they?
Oh, absolutely. I do these signings. I'm doing book signings and pageant signings. 17 of my cities are pageant states, organizational competitions. And I sign and meet everyone, take pictures. And all the money goes to that state organization in each city of those 17 state pageant cities that I go to.
Right. So everybody who's attending these pageants, what you need to realize is when you're going up, now there will be a mob of people. I've seen it happen. There will be a mob of people getting Sam's autograph and getting a picture taken. But what you need to know is the proceeds benefit that actual state pageant. So, you know, buy one for your sister, your dog, your hamster, get one for everybody. Let's talk about the book, Sam, for a moment.
Okay.
You know, a lot of men and women who have been very, very successful in business. After they retire, they write a memoir and they talk about, you know, everything they learned through business and share that advice with others. But most authors write about it from their perspective and really glorify their own self and how smart they are and how brilliant they are. I thought it was interesting that you approached it from how your mother had actually helped you be successful. What inspired you to approach it from the perspective of these promises I made my mother, as opposed to taking all the credit yourself?
Well, I'm going to be honest with you, Valerie. When I first started thinking about writing a book, it was 20-some-odd years ago, and I always thought that I would write a book when I was 80 and just tell the whole story. And I had started doing a lot of lecturing in my last years at William Morris about the television business, but I think people were surprised that I didn't talk necessarily about how to be successful in the television business. I talked about how to be successful in life. And almost to a person, after every lecture, people said, you know, you should really write a book. But in my mind, it was to be this biographical look at the world of Sam Haskell. And I suddenly realized, well, everything I am today in terms of success is a result of lessons that I learned from my mother at her knee as a little boy growing up in Amory, Mississippi. And maybe what I need to do, since everyone seems to be so interested in this prescriptive look at how to live a life, maybe I should write this book now about that kind of thing, having just stepped down at William Morris and moved on into the philanthropic endeavors that I've pursued, but to try to help people understand that it's lessons that don't just lead to a great career in Hollywood, it's lessons that lead to just a great life in general. And I have been so humbled and so incredibly inspired by the people who are touched by this book. And just knowing from your personal remarks about reading it, it mirrors what everyone is saying to me, and I'm just completely overwhelmed. You know, you expect people who know you and love you to respond to something like this, but when people stand 100 deep at a bookstore in a town you've never been to come meet you and talk to you and say, I saw you interviewed by Matt Lauer, or I saw you interviewed by Larry King, I had to come and meet you for myself. And it just touches me. So I'm very much inspired by the people who I meet and, of course, my beloved mother, who I lost 22 years ago to cancer.
You know, the lessons that your mom taught you, and I love the quotes at the beginning of each chapter from your mom as well as other inspirational figures, but the lessons that your mom taught you do apply to so many areas of anyone's life. And I loved one of the stories that you told about setting goals, but that sometimes you're disappointed in those goals. And that was the story about your goal to get the Good Citizenship Award at your school. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about that experience and what that taught you?
Well, I was a very cocky kid when I was 12 and 13, and I just was so sure that all I had to do was wish for something and it would happen. I didn't really understand that, you know, life sometimes doesn't work out like you plan for it to, and I was determined to win this Good Citizenship Award when I was 13 in the eighth grade because it was the most outstanding kid in the class. And I thought I was the most outstanding kid in the class. And probably in a lot of ways I was, but in the most important ways I was not, because I honestly would look in the mirror and just admire myself in the mornings and just thought I was just the best thing that ever walked the face of the earth. And I did everything in my power to convince my teachers and my coaches and everyone else that I was the Good Citizenship boy. And I dusted erasers and I picked up after football practice and I cleaned up after basketball practice. And I was the youngest Eagle Scout in Amory, and I was president of the student body at the middle school and doing everything that I thought I should be doing. I also played the piano and was very talented at the piano. And my piano teacher would enter me in all these competitions that would allow me to win superior ratings or blue ribbons or whatever. And I was winning in high school divisions as a middle schooler. And so I just thought, everything is going right. Everything is going right. Well, my best friend, Randy Hollis, was always the wind beneath my wings. He was always like my pal, and he followed me around, and he talked about how great a friend I was. And I probably was a good friend to him. I just always assumed that he was just my counter ego, you know. And during the spring of my eighth grade year, I was asked by the high school football coach to come work out with the high school team as an eighth grader with three other boys in my class. And I was simultaneously asked, because of my piano, to close the all-school talent show. And it all happened at the same time, so I had to get my coach to let me out of practice early. Well, he forgot to tell me what time it was. My mother was there to pick me up to take me to the talent show. I had to rush off the field, rip off my pads, jump in the shower, put on my little suit. My mother was finger combing my hair at every stop sign. I rush into the back of the auditorium at the school, and my teacher's going, "I told you piano and football don't mix. I told you." And I remembered, as I was walking onto stage, my mother saying that morning, "Honey, do you need to take your music?" And I went, "Oh, no, Mother. I don't need to take my music. I've played this piece 1,000 times. And I sit down at the piano keys, and I've completely forgotten the song. Mm. Sweat is dripping from my brow, and I bang the piano keys like a spoiled brat and run into the parking lot, throw myself under the hood of my mother's car, and cry. And I suddenly realize, oh, my gosh, I've got to go back in and apologize. What if this affects the Good Citizenship Award?
And oh, no.
I apologize. And 2 weeks later, I'm on the phone with my mother every day at lunch calling. And, you know, back then there were no cell phones, so I had to call on a pay phone or call from the principal's
right.
office. And I would say, "Mama, have they called? Have they told you I won the Good Citizenship Award?" Because I knew they called the parents so that they could sneak into the back of the school and watch little Johnny or little Susie win the award. "No, honey, they haven't called. Maybe they'll call tomorrow." I finally convinced myself by Thursday that, oh, my mother knew. She just wanted me to be surprised. But the better part of my judgment was completely buried, and I just became so frightened that maybe something was wrong. And I went to the office of the principal one more time on Friday, about an hour before the awards, because I was the president of the student body. I had to make the final speech. I was going to use it to thank everyone for my award.
I
had to know. And so my mother says the same thing, "Honey, he hasn't called." And as I walk into the hall, I see my best friend Randy's parents walking into the back of the school, sneaking into the auditorium. And I went up to them and I said, "Randy has won the Good Citizenship Award, hasn't he?" And his mother said, "Yes, honey, I'm so sorry. I told them I was going to win the award."
Oh.
So as I'm standing on the stage and seeing my best friend win this award that I had worked 4 years for, I remembered something my mother had taught me as a younger boy. And it went something like this: "If I should win, let it be by the code, with my faith and my honor held high. But if others should win, let me be the first to stand by the road and cheer while the winner walks by." And I went straight to the, you know, office of my favorite teacher, Mr. Mike Justice. He sort of reminded me of a superhero. And I said, "Mr. Justice, why didn't I win my award?" And he said, "Sam, you missed it by one vote." I said, "But why?" And he said, "Because you banged those piano keys like a spoiled brat. And the teachers thought it was inappropriate behavior." And I knew in that moment that he was right. I had lost the award, but Valerie, I had gained my life, because in that moment, this cocky kid was given a comeuppance that taught him one of the most valuable lessons of his entire life. And from that day forward, I knew about character and integrity, and, as my mother said, standing in the light of God's grace. And I knew what it meant to live a principled life.
Well, obviously, you were very successful living a principled life in Hollywood. And the book, everybody, the book is packed with amazing stories and big name celebrities that you're all going to immediately recognize that Sam was instrumental in shaping their careers and their success. And then, of course, you also, as part of your career post William Morris, you became the chairman of the Miss America organization. Basically, it sounded like it was a bloodless coup. They elected you whether you wanted it or not. And there you were now. Unanimous election. I think you said in the book you were the only one who didn't vote for you. Isn't that right?
Well, this is the fact. I had been coerced to join the board by Phyllis George and Donna Axum, two wonderful former Miss Americas who've been lifelong friends, because ABC had thrown the pageant off the air and not picked up their option. They had nowhere to go. And
right.
They needed me to join the board to help make a television deal at CMT. And I came in thinking I'd help them make the deal for 6 months. And before I know it, they've voted out the sitting chairman and they nominate me from the floor. And I'm going, no, I don't have time. I can't do this. And
right.
16 votes, and I won the election 15-1. And in the book, I say, you know who voted against me? Me.
Yeah, there you go. You didn't win on that one. But you talked about how, you know, you came to that position of the chairman at a very critical point in the Miss America timeline, that Miss America really needed to reshape the brand. And you talk in the book, I think, in a very open and very honest and respectful way about how difficult it was for some people to experience the change that needed to take place. Talk to us a little bit about what you were feeling and how that character helped you bring the brand forward to what was last year, without question, one of the best televised pageants on TV.
Well, you're most kind to say that, and I was very proud of last year's show, too. And, you know, life is about change, Valerie. Life is about accepting the external elements so that you can internalize them in a positive way. And I believe that in the Miss America organization, there are a lot of people who care deeply about the program, but who are not open to change. And the only way that I could save this program was to also include a reality show. Now, I will be the first to admit that there were some things in the reality show that I didn't particularly like, but as I say to everyone who, you know, asked me questions about it, for everything that I said yes to, I had said no to 10 other things. But there had to be a
compromise. Right.
And I had to get across to people that you may not like what you see and hear in terms of what I'm doing, but if you can understand it, you can get through it. And people thought I was Darth Vader. I mean, I came into an organization that was an American icon that was almost bankrupt. My predecessors had almost completely killed this organization. And had I not done what I did, Laura Nelson would have been the last Miss America crowned. And I just couldn't let that happen. I do not take one penny. I'm a complete volunteer like all the other people in the States, because I felt like if they volunteer, I should volunteer. I don't take any expense reimbursements, nothing. I'm doing this out of the pure love of the program. And as my wife said to me when I was questioning whether I should take this on or not, she used that verse from Esther in the Bible. I can't remember exactly what it says, but it's something to the effect of, you were prepared for such a time as this. And I had to look at those state EDs after that first reality show had aired, and they were furious because their girl cried and they had said all this. But I said, if you want your parents' Miss America, if you want the Miss America of the 60s and 70s, you can have it. It just won't be on television. And if it's not on television, there won't be any money to keep this program going. We simultaneously made a deal with Children's Miracle Network to secure the scholarships, and we are now on the road back. And I can tell you, Valerie, in very honest terms, we are in the black for the first time in 14 years. And
well, congratulations.
Thank you. This program is saved because it deserves to be saved. But I also have to give credit to Art McMaster, our president and CEO, who has been a great brother and partner to me, and my incredible national board, including three former Miss Americas, Phyllis George, Donna Axum, and Rebecca King Dreeman, who are just the apple of my eye, and along with philanthropists like Lynn Widener and Newsweek's Tammy Haddad and Sue Loudon, who is head of the Republican Party in Nevada, and a big supporter there in Las Vegas. We have wonderful, wonderful people who are helping to support my vision for the organization. And it's a group effort, but it's working. And it's happening, and people are starting to calm down. But I was not the most popular guy for a while because people thought I was ruining the program. But I was saving the program.
Right, and change is hard, and you do talk about the book. But I think the great message here is a lot of people forget that the Miss America program is much more than just the, you know, the broadcast that we see on TV. It is, in actuality, it's amazing to say this out loud, but it is in actuality the largest provider of scholarships for women worldwide, isn't it?
Exactly. I mean, we provide up to $45 million a year in scholarships at the local, state, and national level. And I must say that our television partner, TLC, has been so, so supportive in understanding this. And while they have pushed me to make some changes, they honestly embrace the character and integrity and the tradition of our program. And I think you could see that thriving in the last pageant telecast this past January.
Yeah, I think
TLC,
I agree. Last broadcast, they just knocked it out of the park.
Yeah, they were so wonderful to allow our tradition to still be a part of it while still making the changes that we know we have to make to bring in a younger audience. And here's the key to it all, Valerie. This is the most important part. We lowered the average demographic, which is the average age of our viewers, from 57 to 38 in 2 years. And it's
That's amazing.
Younger, bringing younger viewers is what's going to keep little girls entering our program and dreaming of one day becoming Miss America.
Right, right. Well, I know one of the things that you talked about that was a little bit of a change for you personally was leaving William Morris in 2004. And I was amazed at how vulnerable and open you were in that chapter where you talked about the difficult time that led up to your decision to leave and the difficulty of making the decision. Tell our listeners a little bit about, just very briefly, what the situation was and why you decided to make that a decision of character.
Well, I think we all have those pivotal moments in our lives, Valerie, where we have to make a really, really tough decision. And, you know, I am the type of person who never puts myself first. I've always been this kid who wanted to please and to help. And I learned that from my mother, and it's got its good side and its bad side. But the good side is that you're always positive and you're always standing in the light. But the bad side is that if you're sensitive, it can really work on you emotionally. I was so confident in what my contributions were to the William Morris Agency, and I was supposed to have been made president the summer of 99, but our motion picture department was floundering, and we had to bring in a really tough competitor from another company whose main criteria was that he must be made president in order to come and bring a couple of his top-level motion picture clients. So my partners at the agency came to me and said, Sam, will you just delay your presidency for 2 years so that we can get this guy in here, make him president, and save our motion picture department? And, of course, always being the good son and always keeping everybody else at the forefront and myself last, I said, okay, that's fine. Well, my presidency kept being delayed and delayed and delayed, and this guy who was brought in was extremely jealous of me and the support that I had internally and externally, and he started being very divisive and Machiavellian and, you know, stabbing me in my back, you know, and thinking he was doing it without my knowing. Of course, I describe in the book the time that I found out exactly what he was doing, so I had to become smarter about how I handled him. But I'd gotten to the point that the philosophical differences in how we ran the company were so strong that I just was reduced to being on my knees praying to God for the strength just to get through each day. And it wasn't until I changed my prayer in the fall of 2004 from, dear God, help me get through the day, to, dear God, is this what you want me to do with my life, that it all became very clear. And suddenly the lights shone even brighter, and I knew that it was time for me to go. I was going to bed with a headache and waking up with a stomach ache for almost 4 years. And I just knew that God had something greater in store for me. And as a result, I have been working in the world of philanthropy. I have taken over the Miss America pageant and saved that. And I've written this book. And this book is probably, among all the wonderful things that have happened in my life, it's been the most rewarding because of the response that my readers have come to me with. And I get hundreds of hits on my website from people all over the country every week telling me that the book has changed their lives, or telling me that they're using it as a devotional in their church, or telling me that it's in the library in their hometown and that there's a long list of people waiting, and or bookstores calling me saying that they've sold out. And I'm just so completely humbled. I hope that God lets my mother look down from heaven to see this. It would embarrass her humble soul that I've made her the principal character in the book, but I hope he lets her see the good it's doing, and then I know she would be pleased.
Well, I'm sure she'd be very proud. It's an excellent book. And once again, for those of you who don't know who are joining us late, the proceeds from the book go to charity. And when Sam's in your town, doing a book signing or he's at the local, Miss America pageant or Miss America's Outstanding Teen pageant and doing a book signing, the proceeds from those book sales go to benefit your local or state organization. So he's actually doing this on his own. We're not lining his pocket, and the money that you're spending buying his book actually goes back to benefit the Girls Scholarship Program. So buy. Everyone in your neighborhood needs one. Before we let you go, Sam, tell us a little bit about what the future holds for the Miss America brand.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. I heard that Taylor Fitch is going to be the second guest on the show today. If I ever looked into a crystal ball to see the future of Miss America, when I look at a young woman like Taylor Fitch, who I just so admire and think is just an absolute doll and so adorable and talented, the future of the Miss America program is safe when I look at the Taylor Fitches of the world, because They are what our program is about. And as Miss America's outstanding teen, she has traveled this country and shown everyone what the values and the character and the tradition and the character of our organization is. And when I look at Katie Stamm and I see the incredible young woman that she is and how she travels the country, I mean, she's been to Germany speaking to our troops. She's been with me at several different very special philanthropic endeavors, one with Prince Edward at the United Nations. I see people respond to these young women, and I know in my heart that if these young women are exemplary of and examples of the young women of today, we're in great shape as we move forward. And I have great plans for the Miss America organization. And as I say in the book, I said, I'm only going to do this 1 year. I'm going into my fourth year because I can't turn my back on something that is so special to so many. And I appreciate so much you're giving me the chance to share my heart and to share this book. And I hope that people will read it and will think about their own mothers and then make some promises of their own.
Well, we appreciate your leadership at the helm of the Miss America organization, and we also appreciate your book and appreciate the fact that you shared your mother with everyone who has the opportunity to read this book. And again, Sam's book is called Promises I Made My Mother. You can get yours today by clicking on the Promises I Made My Mother graphic on our show page, or you can order it by checking out his website at www.samhaskell.com. We're going to take a quick break, but stay tuned, and I'll be right back with Taylor Fitch, Miss America's Outstanding Teen, right here on Pageant Talk Radio. Hi, this is Valerie Hayes, and I want to let you in on a secret. I've just released an audio CD of my Mastering the Pageant Interview Teleseminar, and I'm making it available to listeners of the show. The CD includes 3 audio files plus transcripts for easy reference. You'll learn how to spot and handle trick questions, the correct length of an interview answer, 3 tips for closing an answer when you're struggling, my easy technique for answering controversial questions, 2 secrets for winning the onstage interview, plus much, much more. Just pop the audio CD on your computer and listen, or download the files to your iPod. What could be more convenient? But the best thing about my new Mastering the Pageant Interview audio CD is the low price of only $99.95. I want you to know that as soon as the audio CD is posted on the website and available to the general public, the price is going to go up. To get yours, just click on the Mastering the Pageant Interview graphic on the Pageant Talk Radio show page and order yours today so you can be pageant fab at your next pageant.
Tired of wearing shoes that look great but hurt your feet? Are you spending hours and hours shopping around for comfort, style, and stability in a pageant shoe? Former Miss America Cheryl Pruitt Salem has a line of pageant footwear that you have to wear to believe. Whether you're looking for something special for prom or a fantastic shoe to compete in, Cheryl's winning shoe collection stands out from the rest. You can wear them all day and you'll look great too. Visit www.cpannie.com today to check out this amazing selection of high quality, handmade competition footwear. That's cpannie.com. Are you looking to pump up the volume and versatility of your pageant hairstyle? At pageantfaces.com, we've got all the options you need to create the look you've been dreaming of without damaging your natural hair. We offer undetectable clip-in extensions, micro-mini clamp hair extensions, collagen bond extensions, as well as fusion extensions. Why take a gamble on off-the-rack extensions when you can have custom-selected extensions that are right for you? Visit pageantfaces.com today, or email us at imageconsulting@airmail.net. Let us help you find the perfect extensions for your winning look. Are you looking for couture jewelry to create your winning look? Internationally known pageant jewelry designer Stephanie Summers has been creating crowning looks for elite contestants across all the major pageant systems for over a decade. Whether you select a custom piece of jewelry handcrafted to match your wardrobe exactly, or you wear something special from Stephanie's new, affordably priced trifles collection, you'll stand out as a contestant who's ready to wear the crown. Why spend all that money on a great gown and then wear run-of-the-mill jewelry? Visit www.stephaniesummers.com today and let her create the jewelry of your dreams.